So I do want to read that absolutely horrible story that I sent you guys, that Who Was Phone, just for a laugh, because I think that one is phenomenal.
Oh, I picked like a sort of well-known one because I thought I want to read one that's not one of the most famous ones, but it's sort of well-known. And I thought, I picked one that I thought would be, I don't know what I thought it would be. I thought it would be not too bad. And then I read it and I was like, oh, fuck.
Which one was that one?
Squidward Suicide.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some really dark ones. Like some of them get real fucking dark.
That was dark. Yeah. That was like, I'm going to talk about it on the episode, but there are parts of that I'm not even going to describe.
Well, and that's to the point that dark. I was like, I don't want to read out a story instead. I want to talk about the craziness of the reality.
Do you know what? Let's save this. Let's save this discussion.
Welcome back to the podcast of the damned. We're back with a very special episode. No, it's not about teaching you lessons about life like we did in the 80s, but I'm Shory.
It's not an after school special. I'm Emma.
And I'm Dean.
I want to just add to that. This is a special halfway point episode. Yay. We're halfway through this podcast, and this was the reason we decided to do something a little bit different.
It's all downhill from here.
Bit of a circuit. I always use the term circuit breaker now. I've been in lockdown too long.
Oh, well, calm down, Dan. Actually, yeah.
Yeah, calm down, Dictator Dan.
Recording this episode in the past, in lockdown, via Zoom, in our homes. Em and Shory, Shory's in his daughter's bedroom because she's doing homework. Em's in her house and I'm lying in bed.
With Nicholas Cage behind him.
Because it's winter, I'm in my old hoodie. And Dean, even though it's freezing cold and Dean is in bed under a doona, there's still a nipple showing.
I can't, I know.
He's trying to cover it.
I can't help it.
It was funny, like when I texted this morning, he said, I'll still be in my pajamas. Dean said, so will I. And I said, that's bullshit. There is no chance you wear pajamas.
Pajamas.
You're right. I don't own them. Like, I own them.
Yeah. So Dean's just we don't know what Dean's wearing actually, because we can only see the top half of him with a doona over him. Could be nakey under there.
I'll leave it up to your imagination. You can imagine whatever you like.
Yeah.
Half a clown suit.
So
the back end of a horse costume.
Yeah. I feel like there's just the things we could say. Anyway, let's dive into this episode. So we decided to do something totally different. We're not talking about movies at all.
No.
We're talking about screen media at all this episode.
No.
Instead, we've decided to delve into the world of, I guess, let's call them online urban legends. So we had a bit of a chat about what we could talk about that would be interesting and different. And we started thinking about urban legends in the horror genre more broadly. And one of the, I guess, spaces or communities where this has really proliferated and become its own, a whole, I guess, subgenre and community has formed around this, is in the online space of urban legend horror stories that are sometimes better known as creepypasta. And it's such a...
Why the name creepypasta?
Okay.
The spooky spaghetti doesn't sound as good.
So
as an Italian, I'm like offended.
Yeah. So I'm really...
Freaky fusilli.
Creepy tortellini.
Spaghetti.
So,
that's terrifying tortellini, Emma. Come on.
Yeah, sorry.
Go with the alliteration.
Sorry. I'm actually really excited to nerd out about this because I have a background in media studies and have worked as an academic in the media studies space for many years. So online cultures is something that's really fascinating to me, and this part of online culture is no exception. So creepypasta it's a derivative of copypasta. So copypasta as a term comes from the idea of memes online that are copied and pasted. So memes are, you know, jokes or image macros that are shared online, or another way you can think of it is they're copied and pasted across different forums and networks. And that in the late 90s started to get shortened to copy pasta instead of copy and paste. And then creepypasta is, again, something that is shared on the internet, copied and pasted around, in this case, scary stories. So it got became known as creepypasta. And it became such a common term used online to describe these kind of online scary urban legends that there is a website that is just dedicated to this called Creepypasta. And I think the website has been around for quite a long time, probably at least since the 2000s, operating. And when you visit the website, you can see, like, I don't think they've even done much to, like, update the interface, or it's very kind of, it's very plain, black background, red banner. It's very reminiscent of some of the old, you know, chat forums. I'm thinking particularly fan fiction chat sites that were, you know, really popular.
It's a massive Reddit thing too. Most of it is, yeah.
Well, actually, I just realized when you're talking about internet culture, actually is probably one of the worst things to say, because you just sound like a fucking gatekeeping asshole, which is not where I meant to be going with that. But what I will say is I think that a lot of these stories originated on 4chan. So
I don't know.
For anyone who's not really familiar with 4chan, I don't recommend that you go and check it out. I learned about 4chan during my postgrad years, which is over 10 years ago now, which makes me feel like old.
You're so old.
But, you know,
I remember when there wasn't internet, kids. That's how old
me too. And yet I'm not old enough to get a vaccine. Like, awesome. So anyway, 4chan, my friend she described it to me once as the arse of the internet, because she was studying 4chan for her PhD. And she is correct. It is the arse of the internet. Mm. 4chan is just this really old chat forum with a number of different threads in it, kind of similar to Reddit, different themed threads, but a lot more, not to the point that I'd describe it as part of the dark web, but it's a much darker, underground, uncensored, unfiltered kind of chat forum. There's a lot of really, just going to be honest, really depraved, very unpleasant content on 4chan. Don't recommend going there. A lot of gross, trolley, gatekeepy internet shit originates on 4chan. Also, a lot of internet memes and a lot of creepypasta originated on 4chan. So some of the stuff that we associate with mainstream internet culture now, that we now see proliferating around Facebook and Instagram and whatever, a lot of that originated in this underground subcultural scene of 4chan, and it was kind of brought in. The bits that weren't so disgusting were brought into the mainstream of internet culture, and this is where a lot of creepypasta originated and then shifted onto the creepypasta website. I feel like I'm giving a lecture in online cultures.
No, I'm very, because I asked, I'm like, I was looking and I read a couple of things, but nothing really explained where this was from.
Yeah, so that's a little bit of the history of where this comes from. And I think what's really unique and interesting about online creepypasta is a lot of it is written in a way, a lot of it is written in a way that is meant to lead you to believe or question whether or not this is a real story. So a lot of creepypastas, you know, some of them are clearly fictionalized. Like, okay, spoiler alert, they're all fictionalized narratives.
Yeah.
But some of them are clearly fictionalized narratives. They're written in a tone that is meant to be like a traditional short story, whereas some, and a lot of them are written like, so guys, listen to this. This one time, da 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 da, and it's written as if it's almost like a diary entry.
And the titles are very much like that too. Like, this is why I don't go to Subway anymore. Or,
yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah.
And they become these sort of they become urban legends. And you know, I find just as a whole area, the idea of online urban legends to me is just fascinating. And to think that as a society, we've come to that point where if you're someone who, you know, as an academic, maybe you study urban legends, there is a substrand of that area of study now that is can be dedicated wholly to just online urban legends, I think is so fascinating. And Slender Man is probably the most famous, I would say, of these.
Yeah.
Slender Man is just, you know, it's this.
That was a photo contest, though.
Well, Slender Man is actually the one. Slender Man's the one I wanted to touch on because it just blows my mind.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking a lot, so talk about it, Dean.
No. Well, it's just, I mean, it's that whole thing as well. Yeah. Like it's a photo contest that literally led to murder.
Yeah. You know, which is she didn't die.
She didn't die. Yeah. That's right. Sorry, you're right. And this is the.
Give credit where credit's due.
I mean,
I'm kidding. I'm joking.
What do I say to that?
Dean and I, our faces are both just like, Shory, come on.
And this is this amazing thing as well, where we live in this world where we're constantly surrounded by information on the internet that's constantly misrepresented and misleading, and this world that's been created. But the fact that it can create to such a degree that it can lead to this sense of reality, and Slender Man is that one where
There's actually a documentary about it on, I can't remember which streaming service, but there's a whole documentary about the Slender Man urban legend and the attempted murder that occurred as a result of this. And I think you're right, Dean, that I think the fact that happened is probably part of the reason Slender Man has become so famous. It was already a very well-known creepypasta, but...
And it was it's like this very long, tall, limbed man in a suit, ghoulish thing, you know, looking, preying on children who become obsessed with his existence.
Yes.
You know, like, and no one knows what happened to the bodies, and there were all these pictures, and basically, like, you're right, the most, would be the most famous one. But the reality, though, we assume because of the murder, but I also think that this is how a lot of us found out about, you know, Creepy Master. You know, so in 2014, three 12-year-old girls in Wisconsin, Anissa and Morgan, lured their friend Peyton into the woods during a game of hide and seek in an attempt, in a reported attempt to appease Slender Man. The two of them stabbed Peyton 19 times and left her at the scene. She managed to drag herself to a nearby road where a cyclist found her. Which I can't even imagine, and was immediately taken to hospital where she recovered from her injuries. Both girls were, after the attack, were arrested and tried for attempted second-degree murder. And Anissa was sentenced to 25 years in a mental institution, and Morgan was sentenced to 40 years in a mental hospital in 2018. And that's the part of it as well, that it's the reality of these kind of things that do create this life that's larger than themselves. But what you've got to remember where the internet's concerned, I think what's really terrible, like, and I often, I freak out about how much my, you know, cousins or nieces and nephews have the internet. And we understand it because we came from a place where it didn't exist before, about the levels and narratives that exist. But you've got to think about what that means on a whole nother level for different generations of people that don't understand that.
But there's also always been stuff on the internet that was always depraved and weird and stuff. Like, I don't know about you guys, but when
I was looking at me, Shory, what?
Well, you've got your boobs out again, so...
I was moving around in bed.
We're getting a free show here. But, like, I don't know about you guys, but I remember going to stuff like Rotten.com, which this absolutely horrible website, but it was also morbidly fascinating too. Like, it had Kurt Cobain autopsy photos, and it had stuff like that on there that it wasn't so much I was like, I'm into all this gory shit. It was, I don't want to look at this, but I'm also very curious. Yeah. And I think that plays to a lot of growing up. You're very curious about the world.
But this was also at a time and space where the internet was growing as well. Like, it is very different to what it is now. And what was created within this, I mean, the thought that this picture competition of this kind of thing could lead to a murder, people just would never have thought of it. But the reality that this wasn't that long ago, like, this is like seven years ago.
Yeah. But it's also that, you know, when looking at something like Rotten.com, it's tame compared to the stuff you can find on the internet these days. Like, there are literal beheading videos on YouTube. You know, like, that's something I'd never have thought of back then.
I will just say, I don't want us to go too far down that rabbit hole because That's actually just truly horrific. Not in the fun horror sense.
Yeah.
But absolutely. And I think this is part of how the internet has transformed our relationship with media, is that when the World Wide Web was growing, especially before corporations started to get into the online space and really create the same corporate structures and censorship that exists on other media platforms, the internet was and you're right, there are still pockets of the internet where there's a lot of depraved shit happening, but the internet was the wild, wild west. There was anything and everything you could think of, you could find. And even I had never visited anywhere like rotten.com, but I was very aware of it. And that's probably why I didn't visit it, because I am not. And some of the and I think with what I was going to say as well is, I think with Slender Man and what happened with that case, and I do recommend the documentary to anyone interested in this, is that it really also fed into the moral panic about the internet and the fears that people have about this being the next platform that is going to corrupt our kids. You know, like it used to be like heavy metal, and then it was
the satanic panic of the 80s.
And now it's the internet. But I think there is something very unique about the internet in that it's the first, I think it's one of the first platforms where as a society, we can't keep up with the rate of technological progress, the rate at which ideas and information and images and whatnot can be shared and proliferated online is just so is so significant that we cannot contain it. And the difficulty for people who don't have critical thinking skills, don't have good media literacy skills, the difficulty in being able to discern between a credible source, a non-credible source, reality and fantasy, like the blurring of those lines, it does actually create, I don't want to feed into a moral panic, but it does create sort of a dangerous space if you have a vulnerable, personality type or you're,
As a proviso, I will just say this, and I teach this in when I'm teaching media law and I'm teaching research to people who are studying podcasting. I just have to say it now that we've gone down that hole. You are never more than 7 clicks away from the truth. You are never more than 7 clicks away from the original point of the information when you're looking for it on the internet. So don't just look for the top search. If you're looking for anything, even for something that you think is real and might not be real, you are never more than 7 clicks away ever from the truth about anything. That's all I wanted to say.
Good advice.
But I mean, I think you've captured something as well, where that's the reality of horror as well. Not being able to contain it is part of why we enjoy experiencing it. It's why we enjoy reading these things, is the fact that, whether it's in our imagination, like with all horror, you never just think, okay, cool. Like after we've watched movies, we're on Zoom right now, and a couple of times I check my shoulder, just I'm like, because of that, when we watch Host on Shudder, and it's that thing as well where it shouldn't be the point of this medium is it's not, yeah, exactly. Well, I'm like, the point of this medium is it shouldn't be contained. It shouldn't be, it's
the horror
not meant
of
to be. Well, I mean,
I'm living it.
Well, and you're right, Dean. Like, and the internet, in a lot of ways, is when it comes to when it comes to some of the horrors of reality, the internet is a terrible tool that can be wielded in some truly horrific ways. Yeah. When it comes to fun horror, as I'll say, fictional horror, genre horror, the internet is one of the perfect formats and platforms for horror, because by its very nature, it's about sharing and spreading. And you think about some of the original creepypastas.
Sure that's a closet title?
The whole idea was about, you would receive an email that said, if you don't share this story or tell the story to someone else, very much like The Ring, but we're getting like the Web 2.0 version of like
copying
a VCR.
Did you ever share any of them?
I'm sure I did. Like, I don't remember.
When I was young?
Yeah. I don't remember doing it, but I'm sure I did. I'm sure I did. But, yeah, that was the idea. And for some reason it became this part of, like, online urban legends. There was a part of your brain that was like, this is silly. Nothing's going to happen to you if you don't share this. But this other tiny little bit of your brain's like, but just, you know what, it's not going to hurt to just share it. Just share it.
And then you hit that point in your life where you're like, come on, bitch, let's go. You want to go? We'll go.
Yeah, I'm not sharing this because of that.
Oh, yeah. You hit the point where you are saying Candyman three times in the ring. You're just like, fucking bring it. Like, this is the online. But you're right. You know what? This is actually like the Web 2.0 version of copying a videotape, saying Candyman in the mirror three times. You're tempting fate. You're just like, come on, I'm not going to share it.
Bring it.
Come at me. And that's kind of a funny aspect of online urban legends and creepypasta. Like, I remember there are also some that are purely image based. There's one that I remember.
The one with the dog?
No.
Oh, no.
But I'm familiar with that one. There's one I remember. It was a story about some guy that goes to hospital for something. I can't remember what it is. It's a short story. And then you scroll to the bottom and there's an image. It looks like it's a legit, all of this stuff. And, again, this is the power of the internet that can be used for good or bad, is that it is so easy to create content that looks legitimate. Yeah.
Which is it the Russian sleep experiment one?
No. But this one is, you get to the end and there's an image from of a hospital bed and a guy. It looks like a photo, just very legit, in bed. And then you see the image, you're like, oh, yeah. And then you read the last tiny bit of the story underneath the image, and then you realize when you've read it that there's something under the bed, and you look at the image again and you're like, and fucking it's all Jesus, and that's all you see. And it's fucking, I'm like, no, it's terrifying. And honestly, a lot of online image-based or video-based horror like that, it scares the shit out of me, and I can't watch it and I can't look at it because I'm like, it's going to scare me. I do this thing that my friends who know me well, they call flappy hands. When I'm watching something and I'm getting really scared, I'll start doing that at the screen, like flapping my hands to
recreate for all of you in a headspace. Imagine Mr. Burns on The Simpsons,
yes!
Like flappy hands. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So some of that image-based stuff is my favourite on the internet and the most scary.
Yeah.
One
doesn't translate well to a podcast, though.
No, it doesn't. So one that I am gonna talk about, and I'm not going to go into too much detail because I'm.
We
not.
Say that. We always say that.
But yeah.
No. But when I say not too much detail, you'll get what I mean. So I read a more well-known creepypasta last night. Why I thought in the evening it would be a good idea to read some of this, God only knows. But there's a well-known creepypasta that's based on the idea that there is a lost episode of SpongeBob SquarePants where Squidward, I don't watch SpongeBob SquarePants, just so I don't know much about these characters, where Squidward commits suicide. Right, and it's this urban legend that there is this episode, this footage that just appeared. No one knows where it came from. Just appeared out of nowhere, and it exists somewhere in the world. And the story, the creepypasta, is told from the perspective of a guy who supposedly was working as an intern at wherever that show is made.
Nickelodeon.
Working at Nickelodeon when the show was made, and they were having a run through of the latest episode. And it was that episode, and they were all watching it and they were like, what the fuck is this? And so I read that last night thinking, oh, it might be a little bit like Sad Face because it's about suicide, but surely it won't be too horrific. So I thought, that's going to be a safe one to read. No, it wasn't. What I will say, and this is on a more serious note, I will say anyone who's not read creepypastas or they're just thinking of reading more, when you go onto the Creepypasta website, you'll see at the top of the stories there's a lot of hashtags which indicate the kinds of, like, themes and content in the story. Just be really careful to read those so you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
If you're not...
Good content warnings.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not sure, just Google content warning and then the title of the story.
Yeah.
Because legitimately, there's some, and this is one of those ones, very, very dark. I did not realize what I was getting into. I'm not going to describe certain things in detail, but what I will say is, so they go into the screening room and they're watching it, and they realize from the start that it seems like a really weird episode. They notice that the animation is off and that the characters' eyes look real, look almost like human eyes rather than cartoon eyes, and they're like, this is bizarre. And it centers around Squidward doing some kind of a performance, an instrumental musical something, and everyone watching him is booing him and laughing, and not in like the funny cartoon way, just in like a really mean-spirited way, and they're kind of like, this is who wrote this? This is weird. And Squidward's kind of really sad, and he goes home and he sits on his bed and he's just really depressed. And it's really hard to convey this, but it's written really brilliantly in that there's just very long passages describing how eerie and disturbing the sounds of Squidward crying is, and that it just builds and builds and builds to the point that he's almost scream crying, and he's clearly so just distressed and sad, and you're reading it, you're like, oh my god, like I'm really here, like watching this, and this is hard. And they watch it and they realize, because the screen starts flashing in weird ways, and they realize, they pause the screen and they realize that the episode is being there are still images that are cut into points in the episode every now and again, when Squidward is just sitting there crying. And I'm not going to describe them. It's very, very dark. Mm-hmm. And I got to the end of the story and I was like, I was like, that's okay. Yeah, this is really dark. And Squidward shoots himself in the head. And that's the end of it. I really don't know what to say about that.
Wasn't what you were expecting, was it?
No.
Do you know what? It wasn't what I was expecting. I know that there's shit like that out there, but I didn't realise this was one of those. There are some things, and it made me really, it actually made me think about horror. And it made me realise that I like horror that is scary. I don't so much like horror that is disturbing, mm-hmm. in that sense. This is what I would not describe this story as scary. I would describe it as just dark and very disturbing. And frankly, I don't recommend it to anyone. Mm-hmm. What I did look up, and I was actually thinking that I could read one out. It's very short. I think it would take 1 minute to read, and it's good. And it's creepy.
Oh, okay. It's not the one I want to read for a minute.
What's the one you want to read?
Oh, I have one that I want to read too. I have two. Ooh. I wanted to read, but I've got one that
Why
I want to
read.
Why
don't you both say the title of yours at the same time and we'll see if it's the same
one. Wait, I can't remember the title. Let me look it up. Hang on a sec.
I have mine ready to go.
Okay, wait. Come on, Google. Sorry. My fingers are really cold, so it's like it's hard to type. It is fucking freezing in Melbourne at the moment.
It's really cold.
Okay, so shall we, on the count of three, say the name of the episode? Dean, you'll have to count us in.
One.
Hang on. My title kind of ruins the punchline of the story, so I don't want to.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? Don't worry about it.
How do we make sure you're not watching the same thing? You're not doing the same thing.
I'm just going to read out my story.
Read yours out.
Yeah, you do it. You do first. You go.
Okay, I'm going to read mine out. Shori, I apologize in advance if this is your story and I've kind of ruined it, but it is super short. So I can't see your reactions because I'm obviously reading on a different screen. So here we go. You know what? I'm just going to read the first line and then Shori, tell me if this is your story.
Okay.
In the summer of 2013, In the summer of 2013, I found myself driving home alone on Highway 902 from a party. It was almost midnight, and needless to say, it was pitch black. As was usual at night, I was on edge. I had the radio off, and I could hear nothing but the muffled roar of tyres on pavement and the dull hum of the engine. I stole a glance into the middle rearview mirror and saw nothing but darkness through the black window. I know that I looked backwards and saw nothing. I'm sure of it. Just the seemingly endless blackness of the night. I remember it so clearly because not 10 seconds later, a car passed me to the left, headlights on. I had one of those sudden adrenaline rushes, like when you think you see a person outside your bedroom window when it's just a tree, or when you start awake at night with the feeling of falling. 10 seconds earlier, nothing had been behind me. Suddenly a car. I drove the rest of the way home shivering and knowing that something was off. The next morning, I found two sets of scratches near the back of my van. One was on the left rear, one was on the right. The car was pretty old. They could have been there for months, but that was the first time that I distinctly remembered seeing them. In hindsight, there are two possibilities for what happened that night. Possibility one, by some glitch in reality or something paranormal, this other car had somehow appeared behind me within 10 seconds of me checking my mirror, like some weird ghost crap or something. However, the second option is what makes my blood run cold whenever I consider it. It didn't even occur to me until months after the fact, but it makes me dread driving alone at night even more. Possibility two, the car was normal. It had approached me from the rear and passed me to my left. However, something large and wide and as black as the night had been clinging to the rear of my car, obscuring my view through the window and leaving deep scratches on the sides. And I had inadvertently driven it home with me.
Yes.
Oh, man.
That's awesome.
Isn't it great?
Yeah, that's great.
Wow.
Isn't that a good one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice and short and sharp.
I'm never going to drive to Bendigo at night ever again. Like, oh, my God. I tell you, though, that drive, when I do go to Bendigo, like, there's a whole stretch from Bendigo to the freeway that's just dark.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly, like, flicking my high beams. And now you've got me terrified to look behind. Thanks, Anne.
I'm sorry. And do you know what I discovered, actually? Because I was looking up short. I deliberately looked up short creepypastas to read.
Me too.
I didn't realize that there's a whole I guess, you know, you can think of it as a subreddit or a subgenre of creepypastas called No Sleep. And I was just like, avoiding those like the plague.
Oh, no. So I might read
that in the morning, but not in the evening.
There is a podcast called the No Sleep Podcast, which has been going for about 10 years. Mm. And they do those stories and it's all recorded. So they all do proper recordings of them all. And they are brilliant. Some of them are one of some of the best stories. They're not. Oh. Some of them are scary. Some of them are just amazingly written.
I have no doubt that they're and I love a proper scary story, but I know my limits. I was like, I'm not going to read a hashtag no sleep story on my own in the evening. So, Shori, hit us with yours.
I'm going to read mine. I'm not going to tell you the title. I'm going to read mine exactly how it is written, though. Okay. So you need to be ready for this. All right. So
this is not. Here we go. Do we need any like? Content warnings.
No, not at all.
No, good.
Okay. I'm reading this exactly how it is written in the Reddit. So you're with your honey and you're making out when the phone rings. You answer it and the voice says, "What are you doing with my daughter?" You tell your girl and she say, "My dad is dead." Then who was phone?
Oh, God. And I love that this is one of those internet stories.
I wish you would have seen the expression on Shori's face.
He was so pleased with himself.
He was so proud of himself. It's so good.
But I love that this is one of those like internet things where the grammatically incorrect language in itself becomes an internet meme. Like,
yeah, yeah,
and who 100%. Was phone has become just like a stand-in for like anything about like. But then what happened? Who was it? Or, you know, who
that's
was
why I didn't
phone?
Want to give the title because the title is Who Was Phone?
Yeah. It's kind of so like, I don't know if you're familiar with all of your base are belong to us.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. It's that kind of thing.
Like the way it's written, like your is you are. And rings is spelled incorrectly and doing wit by daughter. And it's, you know, you tell your girl and she say, "My dad is D-E-D.
Yeah, because they were cool. Yeah. It's cool online lingo, man.
And then the last sentence, "Then who was phone," is written all in capitals. Then who was phone?
Then who was phone? Yeah.
So yes, I thought you guys would get a kick out of that one because that's a classic one that has been around for a long time. Yeah. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've just pulled one up that I'm going to read.
Yay!
It's called Roommate Troubles.
Oh,
this actually happened to me a few years ago. This actually happened to me a few years ago back at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia. My sophomore year, I roomed with a girl named Cara.
Hang on, sorry. Was that first sentence you Was that just you?
Guys, I'm acting. I'm acting. Yeah.
Okay.
No, seriously, I legitimately thought you were saying this. I was like, yeah, you have a story that talks about it.
Literally what I do for a living. Like, this is what
we're
I do
both
as
like,
a job.
Whoa, hold the phone. Is this a real story?
When were you in Philadelphia?
This actually
You're
happened
an actor?
To me a few years back. I know, right?
You're gay.
It happened to me a few years back at the University of Arts in Philadelphia. See, my sophomore year, I roomed with a girl named Cara, and she was a jazz vocalist, but her main interest was opera. We had this small room on the sixth floor of the dormitory called Juniper Hall. The walls were thin, and her last night singing and voice practices would keep me up all the time late at night. And after a month or so of losing sleep, I convinced her to move her last night's practice to the music studios in the theatre building a block away. At around 8 o'clock in the evening, Cara announced she would be practicing late for an upcoming recital, probably wouldn't be home until around midnight. And I thought, great, because you know what? This means I can go to bed early, because I was beat and I'd had a horrible day in acting studio and was really just ready to pass out as soon as I had dinner. She said goodnight and left coffee and sheet music in hand, right? I made some grilled cheese and soup and gobbled it down. Well, you know this is not me, because I would never have the two of those things together. And immediately really? Began to say, I would never have soup and a grilled cheese. I would have grilled cheese and I would have soup. I would never have them in a joint
I was about to say, oh, this really is you, Dean.
So I got myself into bed. I would have chocolate with either of those things, but yeah. So I got myself into bed got my bed ready, jumped into the shower. You know what? I was so tired as I was brushing my teeth. My eyelids were feeling really heavy. So I pulled on my pajamas and crawled into the top bunk of the bunk bed.
And we know it's not Dean because they're wearing pajamas.
I'm naked. I was out as soon as my head hit the pillow. I should take a second to describe the layout of our apartment. When entering the apartment, the bedroom was through a door immediately to the left. Our bathroom was inside the bedroom, just past the bunk beds. Anyway, I woke up to the sound of the apartment door closing. I opened my eyes and groggily checked my phone. Midnight, on the dot. I rolled back over and closed my eyes. I heard Cara enter the room and stop in front of the bunk bed, checking to see if I was actually asleep, I thought. She flopped down on the bed below me, which was strange, as she was a stickler for brushing her teeth and washing up before bed. Then exams were just around the corner and we were all exhausted. The mattress below me was creaking and then was silent. Look, I couldn't even hear her breathing. I started to drift off again and I was just on the edge of a deep sleep when I startled awake again by a noise, a key in the lock, the door opening. Cara enters our apartment, humming an opera tune, and then the mattress below me creaks.
Dun, dun, dun. Love it.
That's a great
and I hadn't read it yet, so I was just rolling with it. I know how to tell a story.
Yeah.
I do have one more if you guys want. Happy. Yeah. All right. This isn't a silly one though, okay? This isn't a then who was phone. But I may come back. No, I'm kidding. All right. This one doesn't have a title, but that's okay. So when you're admitted to a hospital, they place a wristband. They place on your wrist a white wristband with your name on it, but there are other different coloured wristbands which symbolise other things. The red wristbands are placed on dead people. There was one surgeon who worked on night shift in a school hospital. He had just finished an operation and was on his way to the basement. He entered the elevator and there was just one other person there. He casually chatted with the woman while the elevator descended. When the elevator door opened, another woman was about to enter when the doctor slammed the closed button and punched the button to the highest floor. Surprised, the woman reprimanded the doctor for being rude and asked why he did not let the other woman in. The doctor said, "That was the woman I just operated on. She died while I was doing the operation. Didn't you see the red wristband she was wearing?" The woman smiled, raised her arm and said, "Like this one?"
Ooh. Love it. They're so great. It reminds me, okay, so I don't know if you guys like when you were younger, whether this was just my group of friends or my peer group, that there were sort of just stories, this is pre-internet, just spooky urban legends that we shared between us. I don't know where they originated, where they came from, but they were just shared around. I remember there was one that we used to tell about a woman who was home on her own and she was hearing noises that were kind of creeping her out. And she had a dog that would sleep under her bed and she would wake up creeped out by these noises. And then as kind of, I guess, just a just a habitual thing, a way to comfort herself. And you guys, you're gonna see this. You know what's gonna happen.
I know the one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. She would put her hand under the bed to sort of pat the dog or let the dog lick her hand, and was like, "Okay, going back to sleep." This happens several times over and over again. And then at one point, eventually, she kind of hears another noise and she freaks out. She actually gets up out of bed and goes to the back door to investigate or something, and her dog is outside. And she realizes that she'd forgotten to bring them in. And that's the end of the story. Because
I've heard a different ending
putting
that
her hand under the, I think there are multiple different endings, but all of them are based around the same horror that what she thought was her dog was, what the fuck was it? And I love that these old urban legends always, they just ended there.
Yeah.
And that was it. And the horror is what you imagine. Like,
can I tell you, though, the biggest urban legend that will always drive me crazy that we hear in so many films is the, you're in the car's broken down, and the banging on top of a head of a person. Like, that will never not freak me out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, the ending of the story I've heard is it's a bit more gory, but it's that she finds the dog dead in the bathroom, and written on the mirror in the blood is humans can lick too.
Yeah, I've heard that ending as well. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Jesus, that's worse.
It is worse. Like I said, I heard multiple endings to that story. But, yeah, you're right, the humans can lick too, because just in case, you know, you didn't get it, that's what it was. It really drums it home for you.
Yeah.
I know we said we wouldn't talk movies in this one, but there is the series of urban legends.
I was just going to bring up into urban all of legends. These.
Yeah, yeah, and they are good, fun films.
They are good.
Yeah, and it plays into, like, there's so many of these stories that are out there, and I was trying to find some really good Australian ones, but I couldn't find a lot. Like, they sort of just all play off the American ones or the overseas ones anyway. Yeah. You know, like the Vanishing Hitchhiker, and, you know, where you pick up somebody and they talk to you for a while and you drop them off at a house, and then that person died 20 years ago or something. You know, all that sort of stuff.
The escaped asylum patient with the hook for a hand caught on the back of the car, and, you know, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They're just, I don't know, like, why do we love these stories? You know what I mean? Like, it is quite fascinating.
I think a lot of the history of them is that a lot of them started as cautionary tales, like don't pick up hitchhikers, don't go out and make out in the forest with your boyfriend or girlfriend or whoever.
Right.
Don't do that sort of stuff. Like, it was told around the campfire, you know. You look at some of the movies we watch, like Friday the 13th is, you know, that sort of stuff is based on the, ooh, don't do drugs, don't have sex because you'll die, you know, that sort of stuff. And it's all, a lot of it comes from a very Puritan history of, you know, back
that's
when
true.
You were, that sort of stuff was looked, you know, frowned upon, premarital sex.
Yeah, and that's true.
Drinking and drugs and stuff.
Don't let your dog lick your
hands. Don't let your dog lick your hands. That's impure, you know. Like,
just don't have a dog. Problem solved.
Hey. No, but I think that's the whole point of it is, and it's, you know, but it's also that, like, we've established watching all these horror movies, people like to be scared, or most people like to be not scared as in, like, as you were saying before, and disturbing, but it's that the jump scare or the where is this story going, or, you know.
And I think for a lot of these stories, and I don't quite know how to describe it, it's not quite a jump scare, but something that I find a common trend in these short, spooky stories is the realization that something that you thought was normal or typical or habitual or even a comfort is not what it seems. And it's like it, and it's, everything is about the moment, the chilling moment that you realize, and that's it. It's not about what then happens afterwards, because that's why horror movies exist, right? You can imagine that then there is a crazed slasher under your bed, and then we're going to get the third act of the movie and they're going to chase you around. Whereas these stories are about, and it is always right, like, something that you think is normal. That's always seems to be the setup. Like, oh, it's just my dog licking my hand, or it's just that tree outside my window that scratches against the window, or it's just this.
My roommate coming home late.
Or it's just my roommate coming home, or it's just, and I think.
Or it's a phone call from your dead dad, yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's something about that, actually, that is really horrific, because it's unexpected, because it begins with the opposite of horror, which is things that are comforting, things that are normal, things that are so pedestrian that you're just like, oh, yeah, that's nothing. And I mean, it's kind of a similar reason why I think creepy kids works so well as a horror motif, because it's something that we associate with the opposite of horror. We think of it as innocence and, you know.
Except for the creepy ones. They're creepy.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Like, that's, you know, because they're meant to just be innocent and inoffensive and, you know, but, you know, kids, oh, there's some creepiness, you know.
You know, I just had a really interesting thought. Now I'm thinking of the reality of the fact that, Shori, how could you have ever thought that that would have been Emma's creepypasta story? Like, Emma would never have done that story, but you did.
I know.
She would not have done that one. Like, I'm just like, just logically, come on.
I don't know. Emma, while we're going through this podcast, there are times when Emma is surprising me with some of the choices. Especially like Tales from the Hood, like I said, that started out as one of my movies.
But like, now that you've watched it, can that's you see why I love it?
Completely, completely.
Yeah. But that start, the mortician, that was, I was like, we're delving very much into my territory.
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the perfect Shori and Emma crossover film.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, you know what? We want to hear some of your, what stories you love or things you love as a part of our creepypasta.
Send us links. I love reading these. Send us many links.
Hit us up on our socials. This is our halfway point, and thank God we had a bit of a breather, but also we are powering through. Like, I'll look back one day and go, what a great idea to do a daily month-long podcast. Like, sure. And let's do multiple films at a time. But we'll always look back fondly because it's horror and it just makes it all the more fun.
And we're having a ball.
Oh, my God. I mean, we're in our fifth lockdown when we're recording right now, and in no way when we started talking, this came out of the frustration of not being able to socialise in lockdown and feeling disconnected from our friends and wanting to do something that we felt was fun and passionate about. But it's certainly been something that's got me through the next three, so I'm very grateful for it.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And I've said it before, but, you know, reflections at the midpoint, I would say that, you know, I am being exposed to new kinds of horror that I've never watched before. And I'm loving that. I'm watching things, you know, that are completely new to me. It's broadening my experience of the horror genre. I'm learning more about horror. I know that's really nerdy, but, you know, I'm a nerd. Like, I'm a massive nerd, a media studies nerd, and I'm loving learning about horror, why we love it, why it scares us, the nuances of horror. You know, we've touched on that a little bit in this episode, like the difference between things that are disturbing and things that are scary and things that are fun and things that make you jump. Like, there's all sorts of different... Yeah. I guess experiences associated with horror and related to that different motivations for watching it or reading it or whatever it might be. So I'm loving it. And I feel like the second half, I'm really excited for the second half of this month because we're sort of, you know, I feel like the second half we're counting down some of the big ones, the big subgenres that people love. And, you know, by the end of this, I think we might have turned into ghouls ourselves because
I'm already there.
The one thing we keep, like, the hardest part of this is narrowing the field. There's so many more spaces and places. We know we're at the halfway point and we know there are films or stories and things that we keep missing. And just to let you all know, like, not that we're going to be doing this on a daily but a weekly basis once we're done, but we're loving doing this so much that it's certainly we're already keep talking about bigger lives and different ways we can do
it. We're open to doing more of this. And, you know, for every episode, we absolutely invite you to share, you know, what are some of your faves that we've missed in those subgenres? Because, you know, we're just interested to hear because it is so difficult every single episode to narrow it down. There have been episodes where we have the back and forth we've all had via text to try and narrow down. In some cases, you know, we might have up to 10 movies and we're like, we've got to get them down to 6 for two episodes.
And it's a struggle. Just, like,
We did talk about that with foreign horror where it was there were so many
we
could have picked and it was just that was the hardest one so far.
Yeah. Paranormal horror was really hard. Not paranormal, possession horror. That was really hard as well. There was a lot in that. But, you know, and I think we've got some really hard subgenres to come.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this has been a great halfway point episode. I've really enjoyed shifting gears slightly. Totally.
And I'm going to say, Dean, that if we're going to turn into ghouls, can I turn into the killer from Slumber Party Massacre 2, please?
Oh, my God. I mean,
if you must.
I can't, like, the Slumber Party. Oh, my gosh. I can't even. I mean,
Every time I sign into my Plex, one of the Plex servers, that's like one of the most recent downloaded movies, and the image just pops up and I'm like, ay, ay, ay.
No, that only pops up when you've watched it more than once, Emma. Stop lying to the people. Yeah, no. Stop lying to the people.
It's just so crazy, but hey.
Yeah, but hey.
Well, everyone, will see you tomorrow as we dive back into films.
Yeah, we'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Pod of the Damned. And by now, you'll realise that we've really struggled for every episode to come up with these movies. And that's because for every subgenre, there are so many good movies to pick from that we always end up missing out on something. So we've decided for our final episode on the 31st of October, we're going to do something a little bit special. We are going to let you, our listeners, vote from a list of movies, and the one that gets the most votes, we will watch and talk about in the final episode. Together, we have come up with 9 amazing horror movies that we weren't able to cover in the podcast, and we are going to post them up so that you can vote on them. So these movies are available today for you to look at the list and vote. Go to our social media for details on how to get involved. That's at Pod of the Damned at Twitter and at Podcast of the Damned on Instagram. Listeners will have from today until midnight on the 28th of October to vote. And also, don't forget, we have a full list of all the movies that we'll be covering for the second half of the podcast up on our website now at www.podofthedamned.com. So if you want to and you have time to watch the movies and play along with us, please do so.
Here's a little teaser of what's coming up for the rest of the month on Pod of the Damned.
We say 1, 2, 3 and all say which one it is.
But I know which one Shory likes the least because I saw his rating on Letterboxd or whatever it is. And I was like, oh, how dare you?
Yeah. Yep.
So I know which one he likes the least. For people listening to this, if you can think of an example of a psychological comedy,
please
at us on the socials because that's got my brain.
Werewolves are the one kind of monster genre that I've never really been into.
2 better actors in that role, this movie would have been just phenomenal. And they just sort of lost me. I was just a bit, come on, let's get on with it.
One of the things that drives me crazy about this film is it built up, the 2 things that built unrealistic expectations for me are any boardwalk carnival of any kind, like they're never that much fun. And also takeaway Asian food.
Every sort of 20 minutes or so they reiterated that he ate rats. And I was like, we get it, man. Come on, we've been watching.
I can't come back to a Zoom call with people away from their cameras now without thinking of that movie. Was it Host?
Oh, Host. Yeah.
It was Host. Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's all I can think of.
It's not about bowling because when I was looking for Split on the streaming services, a movie came up. I'm like, that's a bowling movie.
Really?
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
It looked like one of those like Kingpin, like sort of, but a romantic comedy set in a bowling alley. I was like,
okay,
I should have watched that and just sort of like chimed in every now and then with a little bit of, and then they got the 7-10 split. And
oh my God. I thought you were doing your usual dad pun.
No. Legitimately, this was a movie that I found on
Tubi.
So for those
listening, we are talking about the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yes.
Not the bowling classic that everyone...
one on our first movie because
first things first, I owe everyone in the podcast and everyone as a part of this podcast a massive apology. This first one was my pick, one that I loved in my childhood years, and rewatching it, and I don't even remember when the last time was that I rewatched it, but I'm rewatching it for this. The number of times it took me an entire week to watch it.
Oh wow.
An entire week because I kept stopping it, and I mean the first time I stopped it was in the first 3 minutes.
And this is going to be very controversial. Natalie Portman gave me the absolute shits. Kind of shortcut through your head,
mate. I just need to check. Am I thinking about the right film? Because you're saying shitting, not shining.
Oh, no. It's a reference to the Simpsons Halloween of horror.
It's the Simpsons.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure I'm not like...
No. We are talking about The Shining with Jack Nicholson.
The Shining is the slasher movie I'm writing about a guy who goes and just kicks people in the shins.
Ow!
Can I be very clear? That is one I would not want to watch. Like, no, absolutely not. Either. I'd be curled up in a ball.
Can I ask, Dean, have you seen...